You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Matt Waymeyer with you for MLB.com Extras American League West. We are coming down the home stretch of spring training 2016 as opening day is just around the corner, a very important time for many players battling for position or roster spots on their various teams, as that'll be the main topic of discussion this week. Let's kick things off this week with Oakland A's reporter Jane Lee. You know, we've kind of reached that time of the year when the final spots for rotation or roster spots are being decided. One of the names on the bubble right now, so to speak, is Felix Dubron. He's bounced around with some teams in various years now with the A's. A rough outing, though, last night on Thursday against the Rangers. Went 4-plus, gave up 7 runs. But prior to that, in 4 previous outings, he'd actually been quite good. So how much, if any, did he hurt his chances for a spot in this rotation with his performance against Texas last night?
Yeah, I'm not sure it hurt him too much. I think he's been one of the better pitchers for this team this spring. And it's really just, not just for the A's, but around the Cactus League, it's been hard to evaluate pitchers. It was a lot warmer, drier here earlier than normal. And it's having a big effect on pitching. Just you're not seeing good pitching performances around the league. And Felix is actually one of the few that was having results, seeing some success. The A's really like how his breaking ball is looking this spring. So they know the stuff there. It was there again last night. He put up 3 really good innings, ran into some trouble in the fourth, and things just kind of snowballed on him. But he has been really impressive, and obviously it's needed for him just being in the position he's in. Now, the A's are still saying, you know, he's under consideration for a rotation spot. But, I think it's pretty clear at this point with opening day so soon what their rotation will look like. They do have Jesse Hahn, Kendall Graveman, and Chris Bassett behind Sonny Gray and Rich Hill. And Dubron has always been kind of seen on the outside of that group, the sixth man, so to speak. And, of course, if there was an injury or something else unforeseen came up, he would, of course, be slotted into the rotation. But right now, it really seems like he's fighting for a bullpen spot to be in there as a long man. And whether the A's go into the season, with the thinking that they need an arm like that, they need a true long man, then he'll definitely be in there. But it reversely affects a young guy like Ryan Dole, who has been nothing but superb this spring, was so great when he came up last September. And I know they'd like to start the season with Dole in the bullpen, but he also has options. Rosters fluctuate so much during the season that even if he didn't start the season in Oakland, I'm sure he'd be up very quickly. So right now I would project Dubron to be in the bullpen, particularly if they want that long man in there. And his performance this spring, it really does warrant consideration for that spot, even though it's been so tricky to evaluate pitchers.
Yeah, that's a good point. And as we've seen, especially in recent years, guys with that versatility are so valuable, guys that can relieve, guys that can start. Those are roles that Dubron has played during his 10 years with both the Red Sox and the Cubs to begin his career. So to have that at the A's disposal can be very valuable. We'll see what becomes of him as opening day approaches. And, of course, Jane, as we're speaking, in about an hour, hour and a half, the A's top pitching prospect is going to be on the mound against the Angels. That is, of course, Sean Manaea. It'll be his fifth appearance of the spring, his third start. He's had a very solid spring. How has he looked so far this spring, and what do you think the future holds for him, at least the immediate future?
Yeah, he's been really impressive. I mean, for a young guy coming into camp, and especially, a new camp, having been traded over here last year, it can be a little intimidating, a little scary for a guy, and Manaea has just been nothing but impressive, not just with his performance, but the way he's handled himself. I mean, it looks like he's, been there, done that in a good way, not a cocky way, but he just kind of carries himself with that quiet confidence. Obviously, carries a big presence, being 6'7", and probably adds at least another half a foot with that hair he's got. So he's just, he's been good on the mound, but also too, just around the clubhouse. I think he's really just kind of immersed himself very quickly into that clubhouse. And you like to see that, especially considering He is, you know, right on the outside. We talk about DuPont being that sixth guy. Well, Manaea is the seventh guy. And I think everyone talks about teams needing at least seven guys going into the season. And more often than not, you know, teams not only end up using seven guys in the rotation, but, you know, more along the lines of 8, 9, or 10, just because of injuries and such. So I think it's been good for the A's to get a firsthand look at Manaea, and an extended look too. It's not like he was just here, you know, in and out, sent back to the minors. But I mean, the fact that he's still around, still getting starts, that's huge for him. And a game like today is a pretty good test. He's facing an Angels lineup that includes, you know, Trout, Pujols, Calhoun, and the Angels were also off yesterday. So a fresh Angels lineup. He'll be extended, you know, at least 75 pitches. So a really good test for him and another chance for the A's to get another look at him. But I think there's no question that, you know, he's done plenty this spring to kind of confirm what they already knew, that he's got just a ton of talent. And, you know, who knows how things works out with the rotation this year. But, you know, whenever he's needed, the A's will not be, you know, scared to call on him. They never really take into consideration service time or, you know, waiting to call guys up because of the logistics involved with that. If they need him, they'll call him up. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in Oakland by the All-Star break.
Yeah, I would agree that if we don't see him by that time, it'll be a surprise, given the natural attrition that takes place with pitching staff during the course of any baseball season. We should see Sean Manaea in an A's uniform on a big league mound at some point in the near future. Of course, the A's hoping that Manaea turns into another Sonny Gray one day. And not a great spring. I don't think it's, you know, too big of a cause for concern, because it's spring training. You want to get out there, get your work in, just feel good. If the numbers aren't there, the numbers aren't there, and they're not right now for Sonny Gray. But one thing I want to get your feedback about is that one of the knocks on Gray, I don't know if knock is the right word, but just one of the bugaboos, I guess, is that he's never been a big strikeout guy. Now, he does induce very weak contact, and he keeps his fielders busy, but never been a guy that's put up big strikeout numbers. And here in the spring, 12 2/3, 8 Ks thus far. And even though, you know, his success has been undeniable as the unquestioned ace of this staff, are the strikeout numbers still something of a concern, or at this point do the A's just accept that this is who he is?
Yeah, I don't think there's any concerns for a guy like Sonny, just because he's so unique in you know, how he goes about things, and it's kind of, even you see him making some stuff up along the way. You know, you're watching him, it's like, wait, what pitch was that? And you ask him about it after the game, he's like, oh, I just was messing with this. And I mean, you know, who can say, you know, a lot of pitchers don't even try to do stuff like that during spring training, let alone a regular season game. But Sonny just always kind of has his game plan. And, you know, whether the strikeouts are there or not, you know, I don't think he cares. I do think it, you know, in some regard, it does allow him maybe to get deeper into games than some other guys. That's one thing the A's can always rely on from Sonny, is to get those innings from him. And you see sometimes with strikeout guys, you know, you're only getting, you know, 5, 6, where Sonny on most days is giving you at least 7. I think the majority of his starts last year, he did do that. So I think, you know, the A's would rather look at it from that perspective than the other way around. And of course, Sonny obviously is still finding some way to probably get you out.
T.R. Sullivan joining us today, Rangers reporter for MLB.com. And T.R., thanks very much for the time. T.R., let's start right at the top with the top of the rotation, Cole Hamels. You spoke with him the other day, and he's pretty much locked in to be the opening day starter, to the surprise of pretty much no one, despite no official announcement from the team just yet. But Cole's had a rather interesting spring in the fact that he's only pitched one time in the Cactus League the entire spring. He's only faced 7 batters. He's done the majority of his work at the minor league level. Is this something of an odd arrangement to you, or is this whole thing, you know, by design by the Rangers to kind of shield him from opponents he's going to face in the regular season? What do you think the mindset is here by the club?
They need a fifth starter. That's what the mindset is. They don't need a number one starter. They need a fifth starter. So, Matt, what that means is they need to get their fifth starter candidates into the A games and evaluate them. So guys like Cole Hamels, who's a veteran, knows what he needs to work on, knows how to get his work in and get his results. You know, they're content with letting him pitch in the minor leagues and use these A games for guys like Chichi Gonzalez, Nick Martinez, A.J. Griffin, all those guys, Jeremy Guthrie, so they can evaluate and find out who should be the fifth starter.
And of the names that you just mentioned, TR, who do you think has the leg up on that competition to round out the starting rotation?
I don't think there's many legs in this rotation right now or in that competition right now. I'd say nobody. Nobody.
No one's really.
Chichi Gonzalez was the favorite going in, but he just can't strike anybody out, which is, you know, that means he's going to have high pitch counts, a lot of balls put in play. You know, at some point, you know, you got to be able to put people away with an out pitch. And his out pitch is supposed to be the slider. It hasn't been doing that yet. Nick Martinez has four pitches. They're all average. They got to be in perfect location. If he starts missing location, he's going to get clobbered. Now, A.J. Griffin's come off 2 years of injury. He's not all the way back. Jeremy Guthrie's not showing the stuff he showed earlier in his career. Just some of these guys right now have really taken the lead. You know, 2 weeks ago before opening day, there's not a clear-cut favorite for the fifth starter spot, Matt.
Now, TR, would the Rangers possibly go, outside the organization to sign a guy who's still kind of out there in free agency? We just saw the Reds, for instance, bring in Alfredo Simon, the former Red, his second tour of duty, a one-year, $2 million deal to kind of round out the back end of that rotation. By any chance, could a guy like Tim Lincecum be in play for the Rangers here?
That would just be so difficult. Number one, you got to remember, the theory is that this number five starter is only going to be in place until Yu Darvish gets healthy in June. So if you sign a guy like Lincecum, you know, he's going to need time. He's not going to be able to come in here and start pitching right away.
And, TR, of course, Yu Darvish, assuming full health and productivity for both him and Cole Hamels, they could form one of the most dynamic 1-2 combos in baseball. Darvish trying to come back from the TJ surgery, missed all of 2015. What is his progress report right now?
Matt, he's throwing in the bullpen. He's up to about 25 pitches. He's looking great. The Rangers love the way he looks, love his delivery. The staff is there. I think what they want to do now is build up some arm strength, continue to throw in the bullpen, but increase the number of pitches, get him up to 40, 55 pitches. At that point, he'll start throwing the live hitters, and then you'll see him in game situations. And then once you get him in game situations, maybe in April or May, it's just a matter of putting up innings until he's ready to go six innings and 90 pitches. So, you know, we're still looking around end of May, 1st of June.
And that is a date that Rangers fans certainly have circled on their calendars to see Mr. Darvish back on the mound doing his thing. And, TR, for as much noise as the signings this offseason of guys like David Price and Zach Greinke and Johnny Cueto made, and to a slightly lesser extent, the acquisitions of guys like Jordan Zimmermann and Shelby Miller, can you make a case that the single biggest addition that any pitching staff is going to make from last season to this season could be Yu Darvish to the Rangers?
That would be a big boost for the Rangers. There's no doubt about it. You know, you talk about David Price, Zach Greinke, guys like that. Darvish is in their class when he's healthy. You know, you still don't know how he's going to come back from Tommy John. Everything's gone well to this point, but, you know, he's not all the way back yet. But, you know, if he's fully healthy, he's up there with David Price and Zach Greinke as far as, you know, teams that can give a big boost to their rotation or from their rotation.
And, you know, TR, how much stock do you put in the fact that whereas with these other guys, they're changing teams and cities and environments and in some cases leagues, like, again, Price and Greinke and Cueto and guys like that, Darvish is not going to go through any of that. And, yes, it's a recovery from Tommy John surgery, the most major surgery you can have as a pitcher. But to reintegrate yourself to an environment that you're familiar with, how much of an advantage can that give him over some of these other guys that got all this money this winter?
Well, that's a great point, because one thing about Yu Darvish that I think is with this year-long rehab that he's gone through, I think he's really changed a lot personally. I think he's had a chance to really get to know some of his teammates and really step back and take a look at himself and look at the game. And he talks about how much more relaxed he is. He's not so uptight about the contract or the media pressure. You know, you see him engaging, especially the Japanese media, far, far more than he ever had before. He's joking around. I think he's really in a much better frame of mind, much better comfort zone with Rangers and being in America and all those things than he was, you know, before the injury. I think if he comes back physically the same as he was before the injury, I think you're going to see a much different picture as far as just his demeanor, mental outlook, focus, things like that.
And it's frightening to think for opposing teams that as good as he's been his first three seasons in the major leagues, he's still only entering, I believe, his age 28 season, which is, by most metrics, when players enter their prime athletic years. So, again, as good as he's been, assuming full health from the TJ surgery, he could become even better, and what a boost that would be for the Rangers' rotation here in 2016. TR, let's shift from the arms to the lineup here. Josh Hamilton projected to return to action in early May as he underwent offseason surgery on his left knee. How is he progressing right now?
Well, he's just starting to get into serious baseball activities, Matt. He came to camp still sore in the left knee, still bothered by it, had a stem cell treatment. The Rangers decided, hey, he's not going to be ready for opening day. Let's not even try. Let's shoot for May 1, give him a full spring training, you know, give him 40, 50 at-bats in the minor leagues, you know, do this thing right. And that's what they're doing so far. They're on course. The knee is feeling much better. He's out doing baseball activities. You know, should be able to get into a game, you know, maybe early April. And, you know, the target date is still May 1st. But everybody thinks he's really starting to turn the corner.
Greg, thanks very much for the time. And we are heading down the home stretch here at spring training right towards opening day. And the rotation for the Mariners, it seems pretty much set for the top three spots. He's my 14-month-old son is expressing his opinion on that. We'll get to him later. But first, Greg, I want to talk to you about it because the fifth rotation spot seems to be Nathan Carnes versus James Paxton. And I know that neither guy did themselves any favors with their most recent major league outings. In your eyes, which one of those two has the inside track right now?
Boy, that's a, I thought Carnes kind of had the edge, a few days ago. And I guess it shows you what spring means. He went out and just had a real bad outing, really his first real clunker of the spring and just a bad time for it. So he was out working in the bullpen today, so I'm working on some things that they want to get him squared away with. So I think their next start is really going to be key. Paxton on the mound Sunday and Carnes following him on Monday. They really are kind of open on those two guys. They both have minor league options, so, they have some room to maneuver there. I fully expect, whoever doesn't win that job to go to Tacoma and be on call, and we'll probably see him back up here before long, the way things work in pitching. But, I really do think it's coming down the stretch. Paxton seems like a guy with to me, the better upside. He's a guy that when he's healthy, he's just been dynamite on the mound over the couple of years he's been here, but just had trouble staying healthy. And Carnes, a guy they valued as bringing in from Tampa Bay over the offseason that they like a lot. And kind of the thought was, hey, these things tend to work themselves out. Well, here we are kind of hitting the last home stretch of spring, and it's still pretty much up in the air. So, I think with everybody else, I don't think the Mariners know themselves. I think they're going to sit down here after those two guys pitch again and kind of see who they think is their best chance. They've said all along, we want to go with the guy that gives us the best chance to win, and we'll see how that rolls out. They're going to want to probably go with the hot hand, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think it surprises Scott Servais a little bit that here it is, March 25th, and he could still be days away from determining that fifth spot in the rotation? Or was it expected at the onset of camp that, this one might go down to the wire? What was kind of their thinking there?
Well, I think their thinking was that one of those guys would probably emerge a little bit. It's interesting because, a lot of times you go in and you love to have the depth. That's a valuable thing, and the fact that you've got two guys battling for that spot is great. Sometimes attrition just kind of answers those things for you. So I think they're more than happy to have everybody else healthy, throwing well, and And the one thing they would have liked one of those guys to jump out a little better for that fifth spot. But the fact that everybody else is strong above them is certainly key as they go into the season.
Now, as far as the top three of this rotation, it's going to be pretty much etched in stone. Of course, Kane Felix, Hisashi Iwakuma, and then Wade Miley. But I found it interesting that Scott Service wouldn't quite commit to naming Taiwan Walker as that fourth starter. I know that he hasn't had a terrific spring by any stretch, but is there any reason to think that he won't be a part of this rotation come opening day and opening week?
No, really the only thing Service did was not rule out Walker bumping up to that three spot possibly. So he's definitely one of the top four. The question is whether they pitched him ahead of Miley or in the three spot or if he'd go fourth. If he does pitch fourth, he'll open the season at Safeco Field on their home opener. So it'd be a nice spot for Taiwan. But no question he's in there. He didn't throw great his last outing either, but that's more of a factor of really he just had trouble getting his breaking stuff over on a day when the Rockies were sitting on his fastball, and he knows he's got to work on that off-speed stuff, and at that point he was driven home a little more in that outing. But he's definitely one of their four, and certainly coming off a big year. I think a lot of people looking at him as really a key breakout kind of guy that could really make a big difference this year if he notches that thing up another where they expect he could be after a pretty good season last year in his first full year.
Yeah, one of those sleepers, one of those young guys that could really make an impact here. With a full season under his belt, so we'll see what happens. And I know that, Greg, the other day in Japan, it was a big deal when Kenta Maeda of the Dodgers went up against Hisashi Iwakuma of the M's. Now, adding to that storyline, as if that wasn't enough, the fact that, of course, the whole reason Iwakuma returned to the Mariners is because his deal with the Dodgers fell through. They had concerns about his health and about his physical. I know after the game that Iwakuma, as he normally does, kind of took the high road and said, just another game, no big deal. Is he being honest, or was the adrenaline flowing a little bit more considering what happened with the Dodgers earlier this offseason?
Yeah, I'm sure it crossed his mind, but I think the guy has been around a long time and has pitched a lot of games, and he knows what spring training is about. So I don't think Iwakuma got too fired up about a spring training game against the Dodgers, but I think that there's more of an overarching factor there that I think he would like to prove people that, hey, I am healthy. I am worthy of a multi-year deal that kind of fell through with the Dodgers. The Mariners were certainly glad to have him back. And it's interesting, that's a guy that they know very well, and they had no qualms about offering him a deal to come back and wanted him as a high priority of theirs over the offseason. So they're thrilled that he's back, and he's had a good spring. It certainly looks strong, and he pencils in there number two behind Felix, which is kind of where he's fit well in the last couple of years. And to me, he's one of the kind of underrated right-handers in the American League when he's healthy and strong. And he's a guy that really, really does benefit that rotation.
Alden, thanks very much for joining us. And let's start right at the top with the rotation. Still a few competitions left to be resolved as opening day approaches. And I know that there's a few guys who have to be considered locks right now for that rotation, and Garrett Richards, Andrew Heaney, Hector Santiago. Then you've got guys that are kind of on the mend in the Jared Weavers and C.J. Wilsons and Tyler Skaggs. So kind of break all this down for us, and I know that there's still an open competition for that last rotation spot. How do things kind of shake out right now, 1-5?
Well, there are still a few loose ends. We know already that Tyler Skaggs and C.J. Wilson will start the year on the disabled list. Tyler Skaggs is coming along pretty quickly. He pitched in his first game in 19 months on Thursday, and he looked pretty sharp in two innings. If he keeps progressing this way, I expect him to be ready for major league competition before the end of April. C.J. Wilson, that's a different story. We were just told from Mike Socha on Friday morning that he's still 8 to 10 days away from even beginning to play catch. He's had pain in his left shoulder for most of camp, and it seems like he's being really cautious in his return. So there's no telling when C.J. Wilson will be ready. And then the other loose end here is Jared Weaver. He's making a very important start on Friday against the A's. He's scheduled to go 5 innings and throw 75 pitches. He hasn't appeared in a game in a while. He hasn't really thrown any harder than 81 miles an hour, which is a little bit troubling. And, he promises to be ready by opening day. He's kind of adamant about being ready for the start of the season. But the Angels are going to have to see what he can do, how his stuff plays in games. So I think this Friday start is a big one for Jared Weaver, as will be the next one and probably the one after that. I think he's going to have about three starts before he could be considered for the Angels rotation. But if Jared Weaver is ready for the start of the season, then that would leave Matt Shoemaker and Nick Tropiano kind of competing for that last spot, for the fifth spot. Neither has really impressed numbers-wise, but, you know, you don't really pay attention to numbers in spring training. You look at how their stuff is coming out of their hand. Matt Shoemaker is throwing a little bit harder than he was at this time last spring. And Nick Tropiano's always had good stuff. He's got a great fastball changeup mix. So, you know, the Angels have had several setbacks in their rotation this spring. But, you know, the positive thing about that is, you know, when you looked at the roster going into spring training, starting pitching was the one area where they actually had some real depth. So they could stomach a few setbacks in the rotation and still be just fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of guys competing for a limited number of spots. And like you said, if there's one area on this team where they can, you know, withstand a few aches and pains, it is in the rotation. So Jared Weaver, from what you're saying, is going to be the biggest X factor. His health or lack thereof will determine how the other dominoes fall. So we'll see how that plays out. Alden, shifting now to the bullpen, from what you wrote the other day, it seems like a pretty intense competition for that final bullpen spot, maybe as a long reliever. Give me the three guys kind of in the running right now and who you think has the inside track.
Well, I think you got to assume that probably, I would say that six spots in that bullpen are already taken. That is by Houston Street and Joe Smith, who pitched the eighth and ninth inning. Mike Marin, Fernando Salas, Corey Rasmus, and Jose Alvarez, a starter-turned-reliever who's a lefty and who gives him multiple innings. And I think Socha really wants him in his bullpen. I would say that last bullpen spot is probably for a middle reliever. I think Jose Alvarez and Corey Rasmus could pitch multiple innings and will pitch in that role. You know, Al Albuquerque is the guy that I look at as the guy who's probably going to make the team. He was given $1.1 million over the offseason. He struck out 11 batters, only walked one in spring training. And, you know, he's got a repertoire that actually really suits the Angels' bullpen. There aren't that many relievers in their bullpen who throw hard. Al Albuquerque throws hard, and he also has that wipeout slider. I got to think he'll claim that spot, but he does have options left, so that remains to be seen. I think guys like Javi Guerra and Cam Bedrosian, Greg Molly, a reliever prospect for them, Cam Bedrosian, another prospect. I think those guys are in the mix. But I would lean toward Al Albuquerque because he has the experience and because he has that pitch mix that I think fits well in this bullpen.
Yeah, no, that's the guy the Tigers did not want to lose. He was quietly good for them, and I think he could be a good fit in that Angels bullpen, especially, as you said, given the money that they gave him in the offseason. I'd have a hard time not seeing him in that seven-person mix in that Angels bullpen. Alden, let's shift now to the lineup as you answered fans' questions the other day in your mailbag. And one of the questions came from a fan about Albert Pujols. And in your discussions with him, you know, he kind of accepts his role and his mortality, if you will, that he's now 36 and the majority of his time is going to come in the role of a DH. But he still loves being out there playing defense, still loves, you know, playing first base and contributing in that way. In your discussions with him, though, is he still kind of having a hard time coming to terms with the fact that, you know, he is at this stage of his career and he just simply is not, in many people's estimation, an everyday first baseman? Is that kind of tough for him to cope with?
You know, I don't think so. I think Albert takes a lot of pride in his defense and he feels like he could still be an elite defender. He still feels he is a Gold Glove caliber defender. But I think Albert has come to understand as he has aged and as he has had more injuries and surgeries in his lower half that it just beats him up too much to be on the field on an everyday basis. And I think he kind of knew that for a while, but I think he really started to realize that down the stretch last year. He had some excruciating pain in his right foot in late August, and he pretty much spent the entire month of September as designated hitter because, I mean, he could barely walk with that. And, you know, I think that time at DH, although he was playing through injury, I think he started to maybe, you know, get used to it a little bit, maybe start forming some sort of routine between plate appearances that actually works for him, because that ends up being the biggest adjustment for guys who play the field is they're not used to kind of the routine of a DH and they don't know what to do in between at bats to get themselves ready to hit. They don't feel like they're in the flow of the game. I think Albert's maybe starting to come around to that a little bit more, but I think more than anything, he just understands that, you know, he's getting paid a lot of money. He's in the books for six more years, and as much as he could help the Angels on defense, they far more need his bat in the lineup. They need him batting behind Mike Trout, and they need him driving in runs. And, you know, one way that he could ensure that he does that is by staying on the field and taking his DH days whenever he needs them. Albert hasn't played first base in a game yet this spring. He has been doing pretty much all the defensive work. But, I mean, you could tell just by watching him, by talking to him, that he's not really in a hurry to do so. He doesn't feel like he has anything to prove, and it seems like he's kind of putting his pride aside a little bit, which is a good thing. He understands that he needs to stay fresh, and the DH is going to be a very valuable tool for him this year. I'm not sure exactly how many days he will DH as opposed to playing the field, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were at least 100 days of DH this season.
The owner of the team, Jim Crane, had the chance to attend the exhibition the other day in Cuba between the Cuban national team and the Tampa Bay Rays. First of all, Brian, how did that invitation come about for Jim Crane, and what were his takeaways from that historic experience?
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Crane that night, and he said that said MLB invited the owners down there if they wanted to come, and one of the minority owners of the Astros is a Cuban-American, so they both went down there and jumped at the chance. And, you know, Crane also has a relationship with President Obama because he owns a Floridian golf course, and Obama's come through and played it a few times, and Crane has played it with him, and Crane is a very good golfer, as Astros fans probably know. So they were at the game, and Crane said he sent a note to Obama, and he came over and had a chat with him and got to talk to Derek Jeter. And then, but he said it was an incredible experience. He said that he really praised Obama for, you know, opening up some of the relations with Cuba, and there's so many talented baseball players down there that Crane said that it's only right that they get showcased and get a chance to play this game at the highest level. And he was just really blown away by the whole experience.
So let me recap here. He's buddies with the president. He golfs well, and he owns a Major League Baseball team. Is there anything in his life that's not going well right now?
No, and it seems that he owns a pretty good Major League Baseball team, too. So, yeah, it's good to be Jim Crane right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And big things ahead for the Astros in the 2016 season. And it just popped into my head that I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that Sports Illustrated has placed their curse on the Astros by picking them to win the World Series this year over the Cubs. Did that make the rounds in the clubhouse? Is anybody paying attention to that or what?
Yeah, it did. If you remember Sports Illustrated a couple of years ago when the Astros were at the bottom of their rebuilding efforts and losing 100 games every year, said they would win the World Series in 2017. So they've kind of upped the track now to this year. But A.J. Hinch was asked about it the other day, and he said he saw the cover and he thought it was three good-looking guys on the cover, Correa, Keuchel, and Altuve. But he said that's about all it's worth. He said no one's going to crown them right now, and they haven't proved anything. And A.J.'s always done a good job with that kind of stuff, keeping the team very grounded and level. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, this was still a 90-loss team, and they came out of nowhere last year a little bit. They still finished second in the division. So it's not like there's a juggernaut rolling here. They have a chance to be very good, but A.J. Always keeps them in check. And, you know, I don't think they're going to come out and I think they're going to beat up on everybody. It's going to be a dogfight in the division, and A.J.'s going to have them ready. So that's the sentiment that he carried from the cover shoot. That, you know, that's nice. We like the attention, but we got to play baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm sure that some of the players saw that and said, great, now we got a target on our backs. Not that they didn't before for all that they accomplished last year, but now to have the SI thing on their shoulders too, it's, you know, I guess a little more responsibility. But I like the approach by A.J. Hinch by saying, guys, we've earned nothing yet besides, like he said, having three good-looking studs there on the cover. I want to shift gears a little bit, Brian. Our colleague, Lindsay Barra, had a very interesting article the other day on the site, which addressed something that I think a lot of Astros fans kind of overlook. They're the only team in the AL West that does not train in Arizona. They remain in Florida as a holdover to their days in the NL Central. And as a result, they see nothing of their division foes until the regular season begins. You know, the proverbial double-edged sword here, does this hurt them or help them more in the long run, do you think?
Yeah, I don't know if it has a huge impact. I think it probably helps them a little bit more, and that all the hitters in the AL West don't get to see their pitchers. I mean, the Mets face Dallas Keuchel in the middle of the week down here, and And, you know, that's something that the Rangers and everybody else won't get to do. Not that they don't have a book on Dallas Keuchel, but even some of the new guys that are to the team, the Duck Sisters. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a huge advantage, but, you know, it's something that is kind of the way of life. Yeah, they were in the NL Central, and now they're in the West. You know, they're staying here in Florida. As you know, they're moving from Kissimmee to West Palm Beach next year. And Florida is actually closer to Houston than Arizona, which most West teams are closer to Arizona. So, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's sort of an interesting deal. And the Astros even opened with the Yankees and have an interleague series. So it's going to take them a while before they see any AL West teams into April.
That's interesting. And I would have never guessed that Florida is actually closer to Houston than Arizona is. I don't think most people would either, but that's very interesting. So the Astros are staying put, and we'll see how that kind of bears out as the 2016 season progresses. Brian, as far as what's going on the field, the starting first base job, pretty much been a hot topic all throughout Stroh spring training. Four guys, by my count, in the mix, including a pair of minor leaguers, Tyler White, A.J. Reed, in addition to Matt Duffy and John Singleton. If you had to choose right now, who's going to be out there manning first base on opening day for the Strohs?
Well, right now, it looks like Tyler White's job to lose. I mean, he's outperformed the other guys at the plate, hitting close to 400, getting on base at higher than 400. You know, A.J. Reed's come in and done a nice job, but he doesn't have any at-bats yet above AA. So I think he's going to go to AAA, prove he can hit lefties a little bit. Nothing wrong with that. Singleton is the guy, I think, coming into camp that was going to be given the best shot to win the job just because he's been here now a few years. And other than the couple of games where he had homers and doubles, it hasn't worked out for him. And then the other one is Matt Duffy, who got off to a quick start, but it's cooled off a little bit later. But Tyler White is just hit from the get-go and has hit every game. And he against the Yankees, had a couple of hits against a couple of different pitchers. And so if you're going on spring training results, hard to ignore those right now. And I think we're going to see how it plays out. We have another week to go. But unless something really changes here in the last week of camp, I think we'll see Tyler White at first base, whether he starts there on opening day or not, I don't know. I mean, Marvin Gonzalez, their super utility guy, is going to play first base as well. We could see a little bit of a platoon, even though A.J. Hinch hates that word. But you can't ignore what White has done. And A.J., without saying names, said that first base has cleared up somewhat. If you just look at the numbers, it looks like Tyler White's going to be the guy.
Yeah, seems to have a leg up on the other three. And do you think that A.J. Hinch is a bit surprised that here it is, March 24th, so close to the start of the season, that they are still without a permanent fixture at first base? Or did he anticipate at the onset of spring training that this was going to be a battle that really went down to the wire?
Yeah, there's, you know, he said there's no reason to have artificial deadlines. He said it's going to be a 30-game tryout. You know, there's no reason to decide it on March 24th when you still have another week of games. And he's even said even after the season starts, it's going to be ongoing. You know, if Tyler White does get the job and halfway through April he's not cutting it, then, you know, they'll get somebody else. I think certainly we're going to see A.J. Reed in the major league at some point. He goes down there and lives up to the kind of prospect that he is. He's the number one prospect, first base prospect in baseball by MLB.com. So, you know, there's no reason to pick a guy now, and we still have a few games to see what happens. So it should be interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be a very interesting final week for sure. Brian, shifting now to the pitching staff, Michael Feliz continued his push for a spot on that pitching staff yesterday, turning in four pretty solid innings against the Phillies. Just one hit. He did walk three, gave up a run, and struck out four. Who do you think his primary competition is going to be amongst the guys kind of vying for that final spot, that long relief role in the bullpen?
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing. Well, yeah, Feliz is in the mix, and he pitched really well the other night. Wandy Rodriguez, the veteran who spent most of his career with the Astros, is in the mix as a long relief guy. Then they have a left-handed specialist, Neil Kotz. They could end up going with him and just having that last spot in the bullpen being a more of a lefty specialist type. And then Dan Straley, who's going to get the start Friday. If he gets it, he'll be more of a long relief guy as well. So there's a couple of different ways they can go. Wandy and Kotz have outs in their contract on Saturday, so they're going to have to make a decision, I think, on that last bullpen spot here pretty soon, and I think we'll know a lot more after Straley gets the start on Friday and how he pitches.
And then, Brian, remaining in the bullpen, I know that, you know, some fans are going to look at these spring training numbers of the new closer, Ken Giles, and not be so thrilled, not be so excited. ERA just south of 11 through his first five appearances, but Having said that, he was cracking triple digits the other day against his former team, the Phillies. Maybe the blood was pumping a little bit more facing his former team. You never know. It doesn't seem like, from your discussions with him, that Giles is too concerned about the numbers themselves as much as just feeling good, and it does seem like he feels good health-wise and physically right now.
Yeah, it does. And he actually made his sixth appearance on Wednesday night and actually came in to a game in the ninth inning in a closing situation, 2-1, and had a 1-2-3 in it with two punch-outs. So it looks like that was the Ken Giles everybody had been waiting to see, and talking with Ken after the game, he was thrilled. So I know a lot of Astros fans have been worried about the numbers and all that. Ken has said all along, hey, I'm working on things and I want to make sure I'm feeling good. And now here he is with his sixth performance and for the first time going out there in the ninth inning with a 2-1 lead. He gets the job done and looks very, very good. Sharp slider. Of course, his fastball is going to be there. So I don't think they're going to worry too much about Ken Giles. I think one or two or three or more outings like that under his belt should put him in good position to start the season. They haven't anointed him closer yet. I think AJ was waiting to see some of these outings like we saw Wednesday night, but it's going to happen, and I think Giles will be fine.